Welcome to the Coconuts Podcast. Today is July 24th, 2020. The Coconuts Podcast delivers impactful, weird, and wondrous reporting by our journalists on the ground in eight cities: Singapore, Bangkok, Hong Kong, Manila, Jakarta, KL, Yangon, and Bali. Listen to headline news and insightful interviews on matters large and small, designed for people located in or curious about Southeast Asia and Hong Kong. I'm Byron Perry.
I'm Summer Lee.
And I'm Nurul Aslia.
Welcome, Nurul. So we have Nurul filling in for Vim today, who is busy recording some voiceover. How's everything going, Nurul?
Awesome. I haven't seen everyone since work from home started. Hope everyone's okay.
I forgot what y'all look like. I'm going to be real with you.
It's been months. I know. I forget what you guys look like. I have zero clue. I went into the office yesterday just to check in how things were doing and get the mail. And the AC is leaking heavily. So we got to get that fixed. And actually the maintenance guy came in and did his best to fix it, but it was still leaking a bit. And he was saying that all of the offices in our block, nobody's been in there for months. And so like all the ACs are malfunctioning, and some of the leather bags I had in there were covered in mold. There's a huge tree on the outside by our sign that has gotten crazy overgrown. I don't know if you guys have seen or heard about that, but if you swing by the outside of the office, which is in the Kyongsak Road area, there's this tree that has really grown up a lot in the last few months during the circuit breaker.
I have an important question.
Yes.
Are our plants dead?
What?
The plants
are alive. The plants are alive.
Nice. Love it.
I've been going in every once in a while to get the mail and watering them. And they're very hardy plants that don't need a lot of water. And we moved them to under the skylight. They're doing okay. I think if you put them outside, they would absolutely thrive, because the little lawn area is totally overgrown. It's very annihilation vibes. They're not trimming it.
Blah, blah. Nature is returning. Blah, blah, blah. You know,
it's a cliche.
Nature's taking over the world.
Mm-hmm. Mother Nature's out.
Abnormal. So we have Nurul filling in this week for Vim, and we are going to be chatting with Nurul about a recent surge in conversations about racism and racial issues in Singapore lately that has been really interesting to cover. But first of all, let's dive into the top stories.
Now you can wear your love of coconuts proudly across your chest. That's right, we're getting into the merch business with the launch of our official online store, The Coconut Shop. That's shop.coconuts.co. And yeah, our first product is that ultimate wardrobe mainstay, the white t-shirt. And yeah, our unisex coconuts logo tee is simple and stylish with a classic fit. And this is a versatile everyday tee that you can rock in any scenario, from a 7-Eleven run to a Zoom meeting to a night out on the town. And if you want to wrap your city, we've also launched Coconut City logo tees for Bangkok, Manila, Singapore, Hong Kong, KL, Jakarta, Bali, and Yangon. They're all sold exclusively at The Coconut Shop at a special introductory price of 29 SGD until the end of September. Visit The Coconut Shop at shop.coconuts.co.
Cool. On to our top stories. In the Philippines, former Miss Universe Catriona Gray decries alleged nude pic of herself. So Miss Universe 2008 shut down talk that an alleged topless photo of herself was circulating online, that it was real. "We want to inform the public that the photo is fake and digitally altered," her lawyer Joji Alonso said in a statement released this week. Gray's legal counsel also said that they are actively coordinating with authorities to hold whoever is behind this scheme accountable so that they can face penal sanctions accordingly. "We will likewise take legal action against those involved in the manufacture and publication of said photo," Alonso warned. And later in the week, it turned out that she actually had appeared at the NBI, the National Bureau of Investigations office in Manila, to file a complaint against the people who had allegedly leaked her fake nude photo online. So yeah, pretty cool. She's striking back against trollery and kind of, I don't know, this isn't exactly revenge porn because it's fake, but I think it's a similar phenomenon of trying to damage the reputation of a person through nude photos and sexual photos. So cool that she's striking back.
Yeah, man, I'm just wondering about like laws. that come into play? Like, what are they like? What are they on like when you Photoshop nudes off somebody, you know? What does that count as?
Yeah, I'm looking at the stories here and it doesn't quite say what the specific law is. But the NBI Deputy Director Vicente de Guzman said that they will investigate to determine the identity of the persons behind the fake images and vowed that the Bureau will charge anyone who is responsible. So I guess it could be libel. I don't really know. Cybercrime, it's certainly, you know, damaging the reputation of that person. So, yeah, the lawyer said that it was a vicious attempt to tarnish the good name of Miss Gray. So that sounds like it's some sort of libel or defamation type charge. Do you guys know how big beauty contests are in the Philippines? It's absolutely massive. So she's probably definitely one of the most famous people in the Philippines by far, I would say.
All right. So in Malaysia shocked everyone this week after the Communications and Multimedia Minister Saifuddin Abdullah announced that all media companies and even social media personalities would require a film licensing to produce any video content for social media. So that includes documentaries, TikTok clips, or even Instagram stories. He announced this in Parliament yesterday, and that just led to backlash online with people trolling the ministry, posting videos of fan cams, random videos of their cats, and try to mock the ministry and ask them, like, wait, do I now need a license to produce this cat video now? And also people in people who use this OnlyFans platform. I'm not sure if you guys heard about it. So
yes.
It's like like Instagram for X-rated content, right? So people
questioning. Importantly, subscription based. So it's a way to subscription make money based.
Right. So people were actually questioning whether they would require a film license to record their nudes and post them, and would the authority would be keen to review all of these nude videos then before they upload them on the website. So there was a lot of trolling happening in response to the announcement of that rule. And after that, the same minister last night released a statement in response to the backlash saying that, hey, they are actually open to improving this new rule and they apparently do not have plans to restrict content on social media using that rule, which is contradictory. But we also need to be mindful that, you know, this rule is being announced amid a probe into Al Jazeera as to whether they had gotten a filming license for a documentary that they have been criticized for, which is called the Lockdown in Malaysia's Lockdown, Locked Up in Malaysia's Lockdown documentary, which focuses on migrant workers who are on lockdown in Malaysia due to COVID-19. So apparently, based on existing rules, Al Jazeera wouldn't need to require a filming license at all. Yeah, but that's become like an issue now.
It sounds like just a ham-handed attempt at cracking down based on this documentary, which really pissed off the government, but which I think supposedly, I need to watch it and read more closely about it, but it sounds like it exposed some what exactly did it expose, Neural, and why was the government so upset about it?
I think because the documentary talked about how, you know, the migrant workers are being, there are emergency zones in Malaysia where there are many cases of COVID-19 and then they're being locked down there because of the number of cases there. And these areas where like a considerable number of migrant workers live. Mm-hmm. And I think there were situation where, you know, they are not allowed to exercise their human rights freedom.
Yeah.
So that, which was what the documentary highlighted, and a lot of it got backlash from the government for who called it misleading, and like even government supporters criticized it, saying that, you know, it provided like a very misleading and inaccurate representation of how Malaysia has been responding to COVID-19. Because, you know, there are other ways that Malaysia has been doing it, has been handling it well.
Got it.
Al Jazeera has defended themselves by, you know, saying that they see it as an attempt to claim as an attempt, they said that, you know, this attempt, this new gambit of claiming they did not have a proper license, is they see it as like a not a credible line of argument for the government. And they even called Malaysian government contradicting.
Totally. And yeah, I mean, there's no way they're going to crack down on people uploading Instagram stories and, you know, Facebook videos and say that they need a license for those. It's absolutely ridiculous. But that is kind of what they said, right? Mm-hmm. But it seems like they've already backtracked from that. Mm-hmm. Interesting times. I think this explosion of online video is really a new frontier, and the rules and regulations, they don't really cover it. But certainly, yeah. Trying to say that everyone needs a license to upload online video is ridiculous.
Yeah. I love that it covers TikTok as well. Like, you want to dance to freaking Doja Cat? No, get a permit. How dare you?
You need a permit for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's crazy. Yep. See how it goes.
Yeah, man. And over in Hong Kong, woo, a Hong Kong man wrangles a massive snake outside Discovery Bay apartment. But yeah, residents of the Discovery Bay apartment probably didn't expect to wake up to this beautiful spectacle. Again, nature is healing, and they're returning. But yeah, yes. A video filmed by Facebook user Pam Burt, thank you, Pam, early Friday shows a man crouching down in the bushes and emerging with a massive snake in his hands. Don't get your mind out of the gutter. Wearing gloves, he puts the reptile, which puts up a bit of a fight, into a white cloth bag with the help of a security guard. And yeah, snake experts told Coconuts Hong Kong that the reptile, from its size and coloration, appears to be a Burmese python. That's right, we asked the snake experts, and the video is equally beautiful. And yeah, yes. So the snake wrangling happened at around 7:40 a.m. on Friday outside La Vista, a residential complex in Discovery Bay, according to the description of a video posted from another angle.
Wow. Yeah, the video is hilarious. There's a kid who sounds American, who's going, "Oh my God," like, "Oh, wow." The commentary of the kid is hilarious. And you can't really tell what's happening at the beginning. There's just this guy kind of knelt down into the bushes, and then he just whips out this massive python that's wrapped all around his arm. And yeah, good stuff. Snakes. So moving on to Thailand, the biggest story in the last week is an explosion of anti-government rallies that have took place in Bangkok, Chiang Mai, Ubon, Ratchathani. Thousands turned up last Saturday at the Democracy Monument in Bangkok to demand General Prayut Chan-o-cha, who is the prime minister, to step down and dissolve the parliament after his government's lockdown measures and sweeping power has basically been concentrated. The rally, which was the largest since those of 2014, which precipitated Prayut taking control in a coup, continued for hours until midnight. Hong Kong student activist Joshua Wong actually tweeted his support for the Thai protesters as well, rejoicing over the so-called hashtag Milk Tea Alliance, which has seen Hong Kong, Taiwan, and Thailand fighting against authoritarianism. So I think it's something that we're going to continue to see in Bangkok, this protest movement. People are upset about the emergency decree, which has been in place since, I think, something like March or April, limiting people's freedoms based on the pandemic. And yeah, one symbol that they use, which I always kind of enjoy seeing, is the three-finger salute from the Hunger Games. That's one of the protest movement symbols in Thailand.
Nice.
Yeah.
So in East Nusa Tenggara on Tuesday afternoon, the carcass of a giant blue whale washed up on a beach, and it completely shocked so many people and drew hundreds of onlookers to that same beach to check it out and take videos. So they don't really know when it died, but it was about 29 meters long. Wow. The National Waters Conservation Agency actually estimated it to be about 70 years old. Although they don't know how it died, and they couldn't even find any wounds or signs of injury on the body. Yeah, it was pretty fascinating, actually. It shocked everyone. Yeah.
Yeah. The videos and photos are just hundreds and hundreds of people on the beach looking at this massive carcass.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's pretty common across coconuts that sea creatures wash up, and oftentimes they're quite interesting and dolphins and smaller whales and animals, but this has got to be the biggest whale we've ever seen wash up in Coconut's waters. 29 meters, it's like 100 feet. That is massive.
Yeah, that's huge.
You can see from the photos. There was a very famous thing that happened in Oregon in the US, I think back in the 80s, which was that a whale carcass exploded. And I'm not sure if people were injured, but it can be really dangerous because gases build up, I think, in the stomach and other, like little air vessels within, but air vessels within the whale. The gases, as it decays, build up and it can actually explode.
Sheesh.
I mean, like in Singapore, we get nothing cool on our shores. We just get like poker green tea bottles. So, you know, this is fine.
Yeah.
Oh, isn't something interesting has been happening in Singapore waters lately? Like we're suddenly seeing a lot of box jellyfish.
Oh yeah,
appearing in our shores, and it's like stinging so many swimmers off Sentosa, East Coast Park Beach.
That's a bit scary.
It's venomous, like.
Because can those kill you? Those can kill you. A box jellyfish, right?
They're known, well, reported to be like one of the most dangerous because of its venom. Yeah.
So people got stung in Singapore, but they didn't die. They were okay.
They're okay. Yeah.
Oh, damn.
I was swimming off Sentosa last Saturday, and I plan on going tomorrow.
Bruh.
Okay. Look
out. I'm gonna need some jellyfish leggings or something. But they did find. I think this was also in Indonesia, but it was like a Singaporean research crew. You guys probably saw they found that really weird, like sea cockroach.
Crustacean thing that
was quite huge. It's like about 2 feet long, but it looks like pretty similar to a cockroach. Kind of gross.
What's that? Is it an isopod or like one of those things that you're not supposed to pull up from the depths of the sea or like, I don't know.
Well, hopefully it was deep fried and eaten because it's sustainable. Everybody's happy. Someone got fed.
Yeah, man. I saw somebody post on Twitter like a recipe for isopod fried rice, and that's how I know like I'm following the right people.
Awesome. Yeah. Do you guys like, I don't know if I always am not sure how to pronounce it, but like geoduck or geoduck?
It was like gooey duck, I heard, gooey but duck. I don't know.
Yes,
don't
I think quote that's me on actually it. How you pronounce it. Gooey duck. Do you guys like that? Have you ever had that?
I have not, but I love watching those like shellfish opening videos on YouTube. Yeah. Those are beautiful. I'm like, how do you even eat that thing, you know?
So gooey duck is the one that looks like it has like a giant phallic thing coming out of the shell. And it looks really weird, but it kind of just looks, other than the weird phallus shape, like a clam. And I've had it a few times and it's a splurge. When I had it, I think it was about $200 for a plate of it. But they stir fried it at like a Chinese zichar type place with I think just kale or green onions, and it's really good. I like it. I can see how it's a delicacy. It's got a very clammy flavor in a good way, like a clammy seafoody, a clam seafoody flavor, very sweet and rich and taste of the sea, but it's also, it's chunks of meat rather than like a tiny little clam that, you know, has not that much meat on it. It's a big chunk of clam meat. I like it.
Interesting. I'm like, what, you're going to spend $200? You're going to put kale on it? Yeah, that's my only problem.
The kale is just an embellishment. It's all about the gooey duck, however you pronounce it. But if you do want to splurge, or maybe if your parents are willing to buy it for you, I highly recommend gooey duck.
Nice. But yeah, over in Jakarta, I guess, I don't know, this sounds like a wonderful deal. I guess we're all trying to save money in this like economic downturn as a result of COVID. But yeah, you can land a wife. And there's this Indonesian man who says that the buyer of his property can marry his sister-in-law. So yeah, it's a buy one, get one deal. And yeah, he's really seeking someone to buy his plot of land and his sister-in-law.
And marry his sister-in-law.
Absolutely. That comes free. But yeah, in the ad, which was posted on Facebook, of course, on Tuesday, the landowner, Aris Sofianto, wrote the following. For sale, a 72 square meter plot of land in Gria Taman Bahagia housing compound in Gondang Manis, Kudus, in Central Java.
Mm-hmm.
It includes a 5 meter wide paved road as access. Price is 100 million. That is around $6,834. And there's a little note at the bottom that says, if the buyer is a match, he can marry my sister-in-law who happens to be looking for a serious relationship. And of course, he also included photos of the sister-in-law named Dewi Rosalia Inda, prompting the post to go viral as many declared their intentions to become her suitors and that of the land. And he was speaking to the media, Aris confirmed that he put up the ad and that he was not merely objectifying Dewi for a marketing stunt. But yeah, he's serious about this thing, guys.
He just really wants somebody to marry his sister-in-law and buy his land.
Yeah, man.
What do you guys think of that? Is that sexist bullshit or good fun?
I don't know.
Sexist
bullshit. Yeah. I got to see pictures of the house. I want to see that. Maybe, I don't know.
Let me see the house first.
Yeah, dude. What if the house sucks?
But the buyer still has to be a good match for his sister-in-law. So who decides?
Yeah, yeah man. What if
the sister get hopefully to decide? Her.
Yeah, yeah, doesn't that alienate, like, I don't know, a kind of demographic, you know, there's like people that are already married. So like, you don't, what if you like the house, but you are already married, you can't get the girl. What happens here, you know?
Yeah, he didn't list down the criteria.
Yeah, we should totally call him.
So this is the second, I believe, funny real estate and romance related story that we've done in Indonesia. And this was referenced in the story, but I think it was almost like 5 years ago now, there was a hilarious story that was quite popular, I think on Coconuts Jakarta, where a lady was selling her house and said, you can marry me too.
Oh, wow.
So she was throwing herself in there as part of the deal. Buy my house, marry me. Two for one.
Damn.
So is that like, this is this kind of thing in Indonesia.
Yeah, it's like the same way you know, you pick your ramen toppings, like extra seaweed. Like, can you pick whether you want the wife or not? I don't know.
Hopefully she gets to have a say in the arrangement also.
Yeah.
For our feature story of the week, we are going to chat about a recent rise in conversations about racism in Singapore with Nurul Azia, who has also been co-hosting this episode and is the managing editor of Coconuts Singapore. Thanks for joining, Nurul.
You're welcome.
And so tell us about some of the many recent stories that you've done about racism in Singapore, and what do you think has spurred this sort of increased level of discourse about the subject?
I think, well, just based on my observations, I see that, you know, we had a lot of conversations about race in Singapore. I think that began last year when the brownface episode began. And then after that, it kind of went under the radar. And then there was a spike again after the Black Lives Matter movement resurfaced online following the death of George Floyd in America. And then from then on, I continue to see like discussions about race on happening on social media continuously, although the subject matter kind of changed. So it went from how a lot of Singaporeans are showing support for Black people in America, and then after that it went from that to, okay, let's take a look at how we are discriminating people based on race in Singapore. And then after that, because COVID-19 was still a hot topic at that time, and the lives of the standard of living of migrant workers was still a hot topic at that time, so discrimination against our migrant workers became part of that racial conversation. And then, of course, general election happened, and then that conversation kind of morphed into centering on how members of the minorities are represented among new slate of candidates.
Sure.
So one of the things that many people pointed out was that there were no new Indian candidates in the PAP camp, although they did showcase new female candidates. So that was like considered a record number of new female candidates from PAP.
You better boo. No, sorry.
Yeah, what? But...
Excuse me?
I don't know. It's like you say diversity, but, you know, they just put like a few women in and they were like, boom, diversity. Sorry, am I going to get puff mud?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Yeah, so I think it was quite notable among netizens when they start to compare the slate of candidates from opposition such as the Workers' Party and those from the PAP, and how like there was more diversity in among the candidates in the opposition compared to the KP. And it's not just like in terms of and the representation they realize is like it goes beyond just token representation. It's it's beyond just placing someone of a different color among the slate of candidates, because like for example, like Raisa Khan, right? Not only was she a person of color, but she had a voice. She used that voice, you know, and it's something that I don't think people can expect if she had been on the PAP camp. Yeah, so she was more liberal in that sense, and the party seems more liberal in the sense of like allowing their candidates to let their voice flourish and connect with the people online.
Cool. So for those that don't know, the PAP is the ruling party in Singapore that has ruled with a vast majority in terms of its power and the votes that it gets in the various elections that have happened over the years since Singapore became independent in 1965. And Nurul, can you tell us, for people who might not know, what the racial demographic breakdown of Singapore is?
So based on latest official stats, 70% are made up, 70% are people from ethnicities considered categorized as Chinese. Mm-hmm. And then the remaining 30% make up the people from the minority groups, we have Malays, we have Indians, we have Eurasians, and unfortunately we have so many others. Like we also have Filipino Singaporeans as well, because Singapore doesn't have that official category to represent the diversity that we have in Singapore, they all fall under the other category, the others category. Yeah.
Got it. And what is the percentage of Malays and Indians and Eurasians?
So other than the Chinese, the rest of us make up the 30%. I think Malays will make up the largest minority group, which is about 15%.
Mm-hmm. Well, so yeah, anyway, the conversation kind of heated up around the election with some statements by Raisa Khan, which then kicked off a bunch of police reports, right? What happened there?
So the police reports were pretty surprising because it was targeting not only a recent online post, but also an old online post that was posted like 2 years ago in 2018. And that was targeting written in the context of the results of the City Harvest Church trial, which is this trial about the scandal surrounding this big mega church, where six leaders were charged for misappropriating millions and millions of dollars. And the leader was given a lighter sentence, much lighter than what the prosecution had asked for. And he also walked free after serving just a portion of that sentence because of this system in the prison where, you know, you're allowed to walk free if you have good behavior, show good behavior. So that, in the context of that post, she alleged in unequal treatment where the law is applied there, considering that, you know, the defendants in that case came from privileged backgrounds.
And got off lighter, basically.
Yes. And then another post, she spoke about this case that happened in Robertson Quay. I think many people criticized a number of social distancing violators at Robertson Quay for drinking takeaway alcohol and crowding by the bars, outside the bars. And the action taken for that was a bit delayed as compared to some people view it as lighter because some people say that, you know, they would notice many law enforcement officers monitoring areas nearby and not that area.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was your guys' thoughts on that one specifically, the Robertson Key 9 or whatever they call them? Because I thought they got off pretty toughly. Like, they all got kicked out, I think, of Singapore. They were all foreigners on EPs. I don't think they were, none of them were PRs, and they all just got booted like for life. So that seemed fairly drastic, but I know, I saw there were other examples of Singaporeans maybe even facing jail time for breaking social distancing. I'm not sure. What was your thought about that case versus other people who got busted for social distancing?
In my point of view, I think for that case, I think what struck me the most was that I'm not sure if, I mean, I agree that actually the penalties that were brought onto them were pretty heavy.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm not sure if that whole case had ended the way it did if people had not posted about it online.
Sure.
As compared to other instances of where migrant workers were immediately deported after they were caught violating safe distancing, and that didn't even require people to post photos about it online.
As a child of Twitter, I think I'll just tell you like what I saw on there. It was like, so like the young people nowadays were like talking about how, you know, the distinction between expat and migrant worker is like, is that based on race? How do we decide who's an expat and who's a migrant worker? And like, yeah, the length between the sentencing of the Robertson Key famous 9 versus, like you said, the other sentencing for when migrant workers kind of, you know, broke the law. Yeah, that was kind of sus. But I
don't
know.
Point. Yeah, I didn't realize that maybe it was the outcry that caused the penalties for the Robertson Key 9 to be severe, because maybe otherwise they would have kind of tried to quietly give him a slap on the wrist. But anyway, so Nurul, Raisa Khan's post caused somebody to file a police report against her, right?
Yes, so they did. And
was the police report? What was the charge there or the complaint?
So they're investigating. It's still ongoing. They're investigating her for allegedly sowing discord among race on the grounds of race and religion. And what's interesting is that I think we need to also make it clear that the police did not make that decision on their own. The police consulted the AGC, the Attorney General's Chamber, on whether before they decided to launch the investigation. And I think that led to so many other people taking that same approach of making other police reports. So after that, we saw like a flurry of police reports made about every petty thing. Because in the grander scheme of things, that police report was pretty petty, don't you think? I mean, over a post like that, it wasn't... some might say, you know, it wasn't really causing harm.
And it was posted in 2018. So this dude with like all the time in the world indoors, like thanks to COVID, he went to like do a deep dive on her freaking Facebook post. And if it wasn't offensive, then why is it offensive now? And it just seems real fun that, you know, like right on election week, this is brought up. And and we start pulling a Karen and then calling the police on each other. Love it.
Karen mode activated. There was a lot of online Karens, but she ended up winning her seat, right? So that was the sweet revenge.
But I think there was one argument I saw floating on social media was that I think what made the situation different for her was because she was running in the election. And that's why, you know, all these kind of posts that she made can be used against her, or like, and that is why she has to be, I guess, more mindful as to what she writes on social media, especially with the post about Robertson Key. It was months ahead of the general election. And I'm pretty sure the Workers' Party already had a clue as to when the election was going to start. And it was in May.
Yeah. And so then basically people started going through. I think that spurred a conversation, right, about various things that any high profile person or anyone had said ever on social media, and old tweets from Shua Shui, maybe the biggest influencer in Singapore, were dug up, right, that were very clearly racist. Mm-hmm. What happened there, Neural? And what's right. the latest on Shua Shui? We need the tea.
The hot pink tea. Okay. Xia Shui, I guess Raisa Khan was gaining popularity. It was very clear that she was gaining popularity online on the internet. Like, even if you look at, like, because I was looking through social media stats to see, you know, who's winning on the internet during the election. And yeah. Her name was one of the most mentioned ones among political candidates on Twitter, other than, you know, obviously Lee Hsien Loong and Gemma Slim, which is her fellow party member.
Yeah.
For some reason, Xia Shui, obviously she's entitled to her views. She supported people who were against Raisa Khan and people who, I guess she was on the side of people who made the police report against Raisa Khan for her social media post. She decided to go into, you know, talking about Angela Davis and dig up all the history and try to in her way educate people about who Angela Davis is. And Angela Davis is someone who Raisa Khan said she reads books by Angela Davis, and we all know she is a popular member of the Communist Party in America, and she's largely seen as, you know, someone who's socialist and supports human rights. But Raisa Khan has already addressed that, you know, while she reads Angela Davis books, she does not support fully every single thing that Angela Davis stands for. So she's already actually made that clear before Xia Shui went on a rant about how, you know, trying to paint Angela Davis in a bad light. Well, trying to paint Raisa Khan in a bad light by way of Angela Davis. This is history, actually.
I thought that was hilarious because, like, hasn't Xia Shui been called out in a Coconut Singapore article from 2017 for wearing Trump merch and endorsing this dude with little hands and, like, the I don't know, a poisonous rhetoric? So it's like,
yeah.
I mean, if she's going to cancel Raisa for her Angela Davis views, can we cancel Xia Shui for her Trump views, you know? Like,
yes. And yeah. I think Shua Shui did get canceled, right? She got dropped from her show, which she does with Click Network, which is a big YouTube channel here, right? And it kind of brought up the wider aspect of cancel culture, which is a huge hot topic right now. What was your guys' thoughts on that? Like, because I think this is something we discussed before the podcast, but, you know, I think we can bring up now, where I think as a company, Coconuts, our stance is that racism is bad. It's pretty simple. And there's no two sides to that. It's not something that can be argued. So if you get canceled for being racist, we generally kind of think that's a good thing. But many say, oh, the discourse, you can't, you know, even express your opinions anymore without fear of being canceled. I don't really think that's the case. It's more so that if your opinions go against some core truths that many people believe are not both sided, and that really there is, you know, no argument. You can't, an argument that says racism is good is not acceptable in the discourse. What are you guys' thoughts on that and cancel culture?
I think that in Singapore, cancel culture is quite a new concept in Singapore. Like, this week, so many people were using the term loosely. You know, I think at the root of what cancel culture is about, I believe it's about, you know, bringing powerful entities accountable over objectionable actions, right? Which is why, you know, during, you know, people, like, for example, Harvey Weinstein, you know, you have and the group of women speaking out together against him. And then some might see it as public shaming. Others see it as, you know, people standing for their rights. And that was made in order to, with the intention to hold a person as powerful as him accountable for his objectionable actions. And because at the end of the day, he's still wrong and he paid the price for it with what's happening with the law.
Exactly. Harvey Weinstein got canceled. That's cancel culture.
Yes. You know, and then, but now I think because it's become like a bad word, especially coming from people who are using it as like a defense mechanism to whenever they find that they are put in the spotlight because people are disagreeing or with whatever they say. Yeah, this seems to become like a defense mechanism for people who are trying to deal with backlash, with unwanted backlash. And then
it's become a knee-jerk defense with a negative connotation saying, oh, this is just cancel culture, you know, which is run amok. But yeah, I generally don't agree with that at all. And most of the people getting canceled, the vast majority of the time that I've seen, both in our region and in the U.S., pretty much deserve it. And I'm trying to remember what I saw, of course, on Twitter about people who were, you know, oh no, they got canceled. It's like them getting canceled was basically them just getting a huge backlash online, but they're still fine. And they still have a job and they still are making millions of dollars in this case. I forget who it was about. I have to remember.
Was it Louis C.K., that comedian? I mean, he admitted to, you know, some of his heinous acts of like masturbating in front of his female comedians. And yeah, he was dropped by his agency and like HBO and Netflix. But, you know, dude still has a career. So it's like, is he really, truly canceled?
Exactly. What was the Singapore Twitter sphere saying, Summer, about cancel culture this week?
Oh, my. I think it was all like all of us little kids dissecting Xia Xue's 19-minute IG video where she attempts to explain cancel culture and how it is different from boycotting, but you know they kind of are the same thing. So it seems she keeps making references to a mob, an angry mob, and the mob is coming for all of us with cancel culture. So we should fight back right now. And yeah, in the video, she's actually at the end of it, she actually offered to pick 5 brands to get free ads with her to fight cancel culture.
Oh my. Yep. Has anybody taken her up on that offer?
Absolutely. I would love to know, but yeah, not yet. I guess this is a wait and see thing. I actually am dying to know which brands would want to step up and take that. Good for you.
I don't think that there will be, hopefully. well, yeah, I mean, I think, let me see if I can articulate this, but it's something I've actually been thinking about recently about cancel culture and this whole phenomenon of the backlash against cancel culture and what's politically correct and what's not. I think that so often the people who are complaining about cancel culture and not being able to say things that they previously could, they're not realizing that this is a product of disadvantaged people having a voice now and being part of the conversation, whereas previously they weren't.
Yeah.
So previously, you know, let's just talk about a U.S. example, like the Redskins, the football team, which is changing its name. And they really fought that for a long time. And I think there are a lot of people who are saying that's bullshit, that they have to change their name. Native Americans were never part of that conversation. And we're obviously not part of the conversation when they name the team, right? It's a slur for Native Americans. So previously, for so many years before this movement, even though it's been an ongoing movement, you know, racial equality and human rights, but it's really exploded into the public consciousness in the recent months, even just since the George Floyd protests. And yeah, it's kind of like they want to say, oh, well, you know, we should be able to say that. We've been able to say that for years. And, you know, it's just political correctness and cancel culture. But now it's like, yeah, Native Americans are part of the conversation and part of the consideration that you have to make. And if you include them, if you think it's okay to include them, you have to respect their perspective. And in no universe is using a slur for who they are okay. And that's not cancel culture. That's just being, you know, I guess sensitive, to use it in a weak way, but being respectful of who they are. You know, that's all it is. It's not cancel culture. It's not political correctness gone amok. It's having some basic respect for people, you know?
Yeah,
Yeah, I totally agree, because I think this week Singapore also saw one local viral news site using the term cancel culture to refer to the incident where, you know, where a racist children's book had to be yanked off the shelves.
Yeah.
After someone, mm-hmm. after it drew backlash, and then that news site said, labeled it as part of cancel culture, and then it got backlash, which I was not surprised to see, because...
What was the site? Spill the tea.
I'll say it's Mothership.
Was it Mothership?
It rhymes with Buttership. I'll just go with that.
So they were kind of against the pulling of that children's book?
No, it's not that, but they used the term cancel culture in the caption promoting an article about that racist children's book being pulled off the shelves of retail stores by the publisher. So I think a lot of people are, I think that kind of like signifies that, you know, some people actually think that cancel culture is literally removing something from something.
Yeah.
You know, like being literally removed is canceled. I mean, it's actually more than that. You know, it's about, you know, you are in a position of power, you are not, and then, you know, you did something wrong, mm-hmm. and you have to be accountable for it.
Totally. I think that's such a great example of like something that, oh, it's cancel culture, run amok. But it's like, no, that is a racist book that anybody with dark skin would feel very terrible reading, you know? It's a perfect example of what I said previously, where it's like, oh, previously, this is a Chinese language book, right? And just to explain what it is, in the book, there's a bully. Most of the characters, or all the characters in the book, are Chinese. Mm-hmm. And then there's a bully in this children's book who is dark skinned. Is that correct?
Yes. And the book also described the bully saying that he had oily hair, oily curls in his hair.
And so it's just, go ahead, Nero.
Yeah, so it's really disrespectful. I would feel very uncomfortable reading it if I understood. But just by looking at the pictures, I felt uncomfortable already. And it was also, you know, trying to further promote a stereotype that people with dark skin should be fearful of them. Mm-hmm. And to have primary school children read this, especially especially during period when it's part of your formation years, it's harmful.
Absolutely, and I think it's just a great example of a thing that may have flown for many previous years and decades because there wasn't consideration of including that minority voice in the conversation, and now, really, I think through the power of the internet. Those voices are being included and having to be heard. And it's like, yeah, this is a very demonstrably racist book. So if that's cancel culture, the removal of this book, then cancel culture is great. Yay, cancel culture.
It's justified, yeah.
Yeah. I think we need to work to remove the negative stigma of cancel culture, or maybe rebrand. Yeah, I mean, I think it's boycotting, or it's denouncing things that go against some core values that people believe should be upheld by governments and by businesses and by communities.
Yeah. 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 It's not mindless boycotting. It's meaningful boycotting.
Yeah. So what do you think, where do we go from here in Singapore with this? Do you think the cancel culture conversation and this, you know, 'cause there's so many examples throughout society is going to keep kind of building steam and more things that maybe aren't really okay in this climate are going to get canceled and potentially change?
Anything for the greater good of society, it's always great. But I think moving forward, whenever with the discussion about cancel culture, I'm sure this is going to continue. I think it's interesting if we could also note when cancel culture can become pretty toxic, especially when, you know, it's combined with like moral narcissism behavior. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes I've seen some people, you know, they just want to be morally right because it serves their own selfish purpose.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to identify that whenever we see, you know, we see reactions on online, which I think can be quite difficult. But I always try to, you know, see where the intention of this new of these comments are coming from, because sometimes you can really, sometimes you want to avoid a situation where, you know, you want to avoid supporting the boycott of someone, but without, you know, trying to fulfill the narcissistic needs of this so-called social justice warrior.
Sure. Yeah, I think there's a really good New Yorker article about the exact thing that we're discussing, which I really found had some great points, which I think, first of all, about the whole online mob phenomenon and mob justice. Yeah, it's definitely something that we even have in our editorial guidelines that avoid mob condemnations. You know, people are innocent until proven guilty. This is more about criminal related stuff, but yeah, sometimes that's relevant in the case of like Harvey Weinstein and sexual abuse, etc. But yeah, you want to think for yourself. You want to avoid joining mob justice and mob condemnation situations. But kind of like I was saying earlier, there are some incontrovertible truths that we as a society need to agree upon, and then they are not arguable. And one of them that generally has been hopefully percolating for a while, and that is feeling a lot stronger now, is that racism is bad, right? Mm-hmm. And beyond that, there needs to be a moral consideration to decision-making, and morals are, it's hard to have universal rules there, except for some really high level ones, like that racism is bad, mm-hmm. and that every situation is complex and unique, but there, it needs to be judged differently. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think it's so great that these conversations are being had, and I think they're going to continue.
Yeah, they should, because then all the past conversations will be in vain.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining this week, Nurul, and both hosting and being involved with this more in-depth conversation about racism and cancel culture in Singapore. I think that's it for this week's show. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Just a reminder that you can support Coconuts by becoming a Coco Plus member at coconuts.co/membership or making a patron payment at coconuts.co/patron. We're really pushing for reader and audience revenue, thanks to the thousands of members who have joined so far. Additionally, you can buy merch from the Coconut Shop, and we have our Coconuts brand logo tee and the city tee, which people are excited about. You can rep Coconuts Jakarta, Coconuts Singapore, Coconuts Bangkok, etc. So check it out at shop.coconuts.co. And that's it for this tweet, guys. Bye.
The Coconuts Podcast is a Coconuts Media production. Our hosts are Byron Perry, Summer Lee, and Nurul Azlia. Our production manager is Clarissa Cortez. Our editor is Raina Lim.